Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, September 8th, 2011. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Moscow protesters stopped smaller ExxonMobil tar sands shipment for several minutes last night. Moscow Administrative Committee to discuss accepting ExxonMobil money for Moscow Police Department overtime on Monday. And former University of Idaho student sues the university, a fraternity, and the State Board of Education because of injuries sustained in a fall from a third-story fraternity window in 2009. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A University of Idaho student who was badly injured in a fall from a fraternity window early in the fall of 2009 is suing the university, Sigma Alpha Epsilon Fraternity, and the State Board of Education in Second District Court. Amanda Andaverde of Caldwell was 19 when she attended a party at Sigma Alpha Epsilon and fell through a window on a third-floor sleeping porch while sitting on a bunk bed. According to the lawsuit, Andaverde fell 27 feet to the ground and still suffers from traumatic brain injury and is still in the process of relearning how to, quote, walk, speak, and function as normally as she can, unquote. The lawsuit blames the fraternity for not having proper hardware on the window Andaverde fell through that would have prevented it from completely opening, and it also says older fraternity members should have prevented her from drinking at the party that night. Regarding the window hardware, the lawsuit says the window did not have stops, locks, or other devices to prevent it from fully opening. Andaverde and her family also blames the State Board of Education in the lawsuit because they should have known, quote, dangerous conditions existed, unquote, at the third-floor sleeping porch. The university had reported at the time three other students had fallen from windows in Greek houses during the previous 4 or 5 years, and Averde's fall in September 2009 came 2 weeks after another student was badly injured in a fall from a third-story fraternity window. UI student Shane Miller, who was 20 years old at the time, fell from a high window at Delta Tau Delta fraternity and spent time at Harborview Medical Center in Seattle after receiving serious injuries. A student on the roof of her fraternity slipped on ice and fell while taking down holiday decorations in 2008, and also in 2008, a freshman fell from a fire escape at the Alpha Tau Omega fraternity but was not injured. A 21-year-old student from Boise fell 50 feet out a fraternity window at Beta Theta Pi House in March 2006. The Idaho Falls Post-Register reports crews have removed the last loads of radioactive waste from Pit 9 at an Idaho National Laboratory complex called the Radioactive Waste Management Complex. The cleanup process at Pit 9 has been going on since the 1990s. The pit was created in the 1960s by federal nuclear lab workers who dumped thousands of barrels and boxes of radioactive and hazardous waste into the pit. They then covered the waste with soil. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has thrown out the death sentence imposed by an Idaho judge against Lacey Mark Sivak. Sivak was convicted of murdering Dixie Wilson at the Baird Oil gas station in Garden City in 1981. The appeals court ruled that a fellow inmate, Jimmy Latham, who testified Sivak committed the killing, was lying. Attorney Bruce Livingston of the Federal Defender Services of Idaho, who represented Sivak, said the court ruling underscores how unreliable prison snitches can be. What's particularly troubling, outrageous in this case, is that prosecutors knew the inmate was lying and hid the truth as they sought an execution of Mr. Sivak. Latham, who was serving time for burglary and insufficient funds, testified Sivak confessed to the murder in jail. In exchange for testifying against Sivak and another man accused of murder in a separate case, Latham received money and was released from jail and the charges against him dismissed. Another prison inmate, Dwayne Grierson, who testified that Sivak and fellow suspect Randall Bainbridge admitted to the murder, lied on the stand by saying he was not given favorable treatment by prosecutors. Besides the death penalty for Sivak, Randall Bainbridge was sentenced to life in prison for the same murder. Bainbridge's unsworn statement was the only testimony at the trial that Sivak had committed the killing. The 30-year-old Wilson was found shot 5 times in the head and stabbed 20 times in the head, neck, and shoulders. She was also found to have been molested. Prosecutors said Sivak and Bainbridge killed Wilson because Sivak believed Wilson had caused him to lose his job at the Baird Oil gas station and because Bainbridge was sexually motivated. 9 homes and 10 outbuildings have burned in a wildfire near Goldendale, Washington. The fire burned 3 square miles of land near Sadus Pass. About 400 firefighters are fighting the blaze, and about 300 people have been evacuated. 3 people blocked an ExxonMobil tar sand shipment traveling north through Moscow last night for several minutes. The load was not one of the 66 extra-large split megaloads weighing up to 413,000 pounds heading through Moscow, but one of the smaller components of the ExxonMobil refinery bound for the Alberta tar sands weighing 69,700 pounds. The load was 22 feet wide, taking up 2 lanes of US 95. KRFP citizen journalist Paulie D. called in this report about what happened when the small ExxonMobil tar sands shipment came through Moscow at about 11:15 last night.
It was 2 young women and one young man. One of the women was on roller skates and had a small sign. She rolled out into the center and just stood there with another woman who appeared to be her friend. They actually did not sit down in the crosswalk. They stood up and held their signs facing the convoy, as it were, as it came through.
Were they in front of the convoy, like the vehicle that had the sign that said oversized loads, or were they in front of the load itself?
They were in front of the first vehicles, so the actual load itself was probably about 2 or 3 vehicles behind at that point.
And anyway, what happened then?
Well, what happened then was as soon as authorities found out that people were in the crosswalk and not moving, suddenly there was a huge rush of various Idaho State Police and Moscow Police Department came to confront the protesters, and it was a little bit unclear exactly what they were speaking about, but it seemed that the protesters were concerned with their free speech and their right to speak out against the tar sands operations, and the police, for their part, seemed more concerned with the safety issues and just getting the load through town.
Okay, and so did you see any arrests?
I saw absolutely no arrests.
Okay, so how did the situation end?
Well, about approximately 8 officers surrounded these protesters, and they talked to them. I spoke with one of the protesters afterwards, and they were given an opportunity to stay in the crosswalk for a few minutes with their signs facing the loads, and then they were given warning that if they were going to be out there any longer, they would be arrested. I get that was what I gathered.
KRFP citizen journalist Polly D spoke with Ian Fontaine, who was one of the protesters who stayed in the crosswalk in front of the load Wednesday night.
The Idaho State Police were very professional and cordial. They instructed us that they would give us a few moments in the crosswalk in front of the load, after which they would give us two warnings. The second warning, if we did not move out of the road, then we would be arrested and we would go to jail. However, they told us they would give us warnings, and before they gave us any warning at all, they let us express why we were here, why we're occupying the road, and why we're taking issue with the mega load. One of the Idaho state officers agreed with us, said that he supported what it is we're doing here. So we have the support of the Idaho State Police, but they're of course bound to their civic duty to do what the Idaho Transportation Department has said. They've given permits, and so it's now illegal transportation, and they're doing their civic duty to make sure that that comes off without any harm to anybody on the highway or surrounding areas. So
great.
But they were very respectful, and I have a lot of respect for them, especially to admit that they agree with what it is we're doing here.
Protester Ian Fontaine, protester Ali Pfeiffer had a sign saying, "Are you prepared to sacrifice your children?"
Even though in our generation we might not see complete destruction from this oil project, eventually it's going to catch up with us. And so it might not even be our children, it might be our grandchildren. But eventually we're going to be responsible for the deaths of our future generations. So that's why I wrote the sign, because I think a lot of people don't think of that. They see, oh, well, we're doing okay, but they don't think about, well, what about our children and what about our grandchildren, which I think is really sad because they've got more time on the earth than we do.
Book People owner Bob Green had these comments before the load rolled through on Wednesday night.
We're here not so much to show our againstness, but what we're for. We're for the earth and we're for people, and we believe that things should be done to benefit people, not for profit. There's no reason to destroy the world in the name of profit and leave us with nothing. We've lost 40 years of attempts to improve our technology and reduce our dependence on fossil fuels. Our solar energy companies are going out of business. They need some support, or they need at least a push to get people to install solar energy. Our electric vehicles are few and far between, and they're nowhere near as good as they should be. We're struggling for mass transit after years of fighting for it. It's not available or accessible as it should be. We're still asking for bike lanes and sidewalks to be built so that other means of transportation. And what we want to see is people come down here and demonstrate their support for a world made for people and for the use of people, that where people come first, not something artificial like profit. The high guru of management, Peter Drucker, said profit is an accounting illusion. You should not really crucify humanity on an illusion. What we need is a world based on people's needs, and we don't need to destroy a native landscape for fuel that we might not need, or fuel that's not necessary, or fuel that is environmentally destructive. If you hear me and you still have time to come down, I wish you would come down and join us and show your support for Mother Earth and show your support for your fellow humans and help us build a better world.
Moscow business owner Bob Green commenting on his opposition to the Alberta tar sands shipments coming through the city of Moscow. He spoke on Wednesday night. That was Moscow business owner Bob Green speaking last night on Washington Street as one of the smaller ExxonMobil tar sands shipments rolled through. Another shipment, the third in three nights, is planned to roll through Moscow sometime late tonight. It weighs 84,000 pounds and is 22 feet wide, meaning it will take up two lanes of US 95 as it heads north from the Port of Lewiston towards the Alberta tar sands. All three loads, previous night, last night, and tonight's loads, are owned by ExxonMobil. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP in Moscow. This coming Monday, the Moscow City Council Administrative Committee will discuss whether or not to request financial compensation from Imperial Oil ExxonMobil for the additional costs of police protection for the megaloads that are rolling through Moscow. Moscow Police Chief David Duke told the Daily News, prior to the first megaload shipment on August 26th, police overtime costs had been kept to a minimum. The Idaho State Police has a contract with the hauler Mammut and the oil company to escort the over-legal shipments and city police to assist them. 14 Moscow police officers responded to the megaload shipment on August 26th when six protesters were arrested. There was a crowd of more than 100 people on hand. Three of those officers were on overtime. 18 Moscow Police Department officers were on duty for the shipment on August 31st, five of whom were on overtime. Councilmember Walter Steed, who sits on the Administrative Committee, told the Daily News, "We are not only calling in officers that wouldn't normally be working and paying them overtime, but we're also typing up our regular patrol officers. Since we can't hand a bill to the protesters, we should be asking ExxonMobil or Mammut to compensate our costs." Imperial Oil spokesperson Pius Rollheiser said the company would be open to discussing compensation and reiterated the company's commitment to over 100% of the costs of moving the pieces of an oil refinery bound for Canada through town. Rollheiser said, "It's been our expectation that the taxpayers of Idaho or Montana should be on the hook for any costs to us." A Washington State Court of Appeals ruling opened the way yesterday for a measure banning the use of automated cameras to catch people running red lights to appear on the ballot in Bellingham this fall. The ruling was a partial victory for the red light camera company American Traffic Solutions, which has sued to block the measure from the ballot because it also reversed an earlier ruling by Whatcom County Superior Court Judge Ira Urig, who ordered the company to pay the initiative organizers' legal costs and a $10,000 fine. The attorney for the anti-camera campaign, Stephen Pigeon, said the group will appeal that aspect of the decision to the Washington State Supreme Court. Initiative activist Tim Eyman has helped get anti-camera measures on the ballot this fall in Longview, Bellingham, and Monroe, and signature gathering continues in Redmond and Wenatchee. The anti-camera initiative, which passed overwhelmingly in Mukilteo, is now before the state's Supreme Court. The three Republican members of Idaho's Redistricting Commission filed a lawsuit against their own panel yesterday, minutes after Secretary of State Ben Assersa filed a complaint asking the state Supreme Court to clarify contentious issues and send the commission back to work for up to 60 days. Both Assersa's and the Republican Commission members' complaints ask the justices whether the commission should avoid splitting counties, which the Democrats contend should be minimized under provisions in the state constitution. They also ask how much they should take into account a 2009 law meant to avoid unwieldy districts. The commissioners have retained attorney Chris Troupas, and Commissioner Lou Esposito told the Spokesman Review there's been a couple of us that have covered his costs, adding that if the suit ends up being long and protracted, the state will pick up the bill because it's related to the commission's business. Although $100,000 remains in the commission budget, Legislative Services aide Keith Bybee said a vote of a majority of the commission is required to hire outside counsel. The Republicans are asking the court to give the commission just 3 days to finalize an agreement once they are ordered back to work. With the Redistricting Commission, made up of three Democrats and three Republicans, four members must vote in favor of a legislative or congressional district map in order for it to become effective. Pullman School Superintendent Paul Sturm said a larger-than-expected rise in school enrollment this fall bodes well for the city because it is an indicator that families are moving in. Sturm attributes the business climate in general, as well as Schweitzer Engineering Laboratory and Washington State University, for supporting steady population growth. Executive Director of Support Services Dan Hornfelt said, a decade ago, enrollment was flat. The school district has picked up 53 additional students, bringing this year's enrollment total to 2,320 full-time students. Increased enrollment means more money from the state, and Hornfelt said he is looking into increasing the hours of some part-time employees, facilities improvements, and reducing class sizes. Federal charges against a Port Hill, Idaho man who shot and killed a grizzly bear in his yard have been dropped. Instead, Jeremy M. Hill was issued a non-criminal citation for shooting the bear and paid a $1,000 fine, which he said puts the ordeal for him and his family behind them. Hill said he acted in fear for the safety of his family when his wife spotted three grizzlies near the children's 4-H pig pen, and he was unsure where his children were. He shot one bear and the others fled. When the wounded bear turned towards the house, he shot it twice more, killing it. He immediately called Fish and Game and later pleaded not guilty to unlawfully taking a federally protected species. U.S. Attorney Wendy J. Olson said the proper response to finding a grizzly near your home or in a campsite is to call wildlife officials, who are required to act immediately. Boundary County residents ran up the bidding on Hill's daughter's pig at the 4-H animal auction and raised nearly $20,000 for the Hill family. Governor Butch Otter intervened in the case by sending a letter to U.S. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar asking him to look into the case. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, it's going to be partly cloudy tonight, low 51, then clear to mostly clear conditions all the way through the middle of next week. Highs tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday around 91. Monday's high 87, Tuesday 84, Wednesday 81. Lows in the upper 50s and down to around 50 degrees early next week. Currently, we've got 91 degrees under fair skies in Moscow. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Remember, if you want to help KRFP keep news reports like this on the air, plus the news reports you hear during Morning Mix and the recordings of local events and public affairs shows you hear on KRFP, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, please become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $25 for students. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or look up our website and find out how to donate to Radio Free Moscow. Coming up next, we have Talk Nation Radio. Flashpoints was preempted for the president's speech, coverage of that on Pacifica. And so instead of Flashpoints, we'll be running two interviews from Canadian community radio stations about the tar sands, plus another short program out of Seattle that is about the tar sands protests in Washington, D.C. So those will be coming up after Talk Nation Radio, which runs a half hour. This is KRFP Moscow. Nancy Casey assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a good night. I'm Lee Robartis.